Guess what day it is?
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
I was minding my own business. I wasn't hurting anybody. I don't know if you picked this up on your radio, but apparently, President Trump got jiggy. We'll get to the top six at six in a second. Welcome to the program. This is show number 901 and the long awaited John DeCoste birthday party. John DeCoste, when was your birthday?
Woo!
April 7th.
April 7th. You sound confused. Is it different each year?
It is different. I move it around. It's like a floating holiday.
Yeah, okay. The reason I ask is because Mary made a cake yesterday for show number 900, and I know she's made you another cake today for show number 901.
Oh, come on.
Let's go live to Mary on the 7th floor. Is it the same cake?
I didn't get the memo.
What? No cake?
No.
Okay, John, I asked, which day do you want me to bring the cake?
Wow,
Tuesday or Wednesday?
Wow.
And everybody said, bring it Tuesday.
No, we thought there was going to be two cakes.
Yeah, we thought you'd do another cake. This is really selfish of you, Mary, not spending your own money
to make yet another cake. I told you I had to clean the bathrooms. I told you.
It's rather outrageous.
God.
Yeah.
Well, my bathrooms were dirty.
This is heartbreaking.
I have a yogurt that we could use.
Oh,
yeah, and you know what? You were nice enough to give me an orange. I'll give John my orange.
Yeah, yeah. You know what? I have three. You can keep an orange, and I'll give John. Here, John.
And Dave, why don't you give him some of the booze you're hiding?
I wouldn't do that, but I have a banana.
Okay.
I have an oatmeal raisin cookie.
I brought a dozen bagels if anybody for my birthday.
Can I give you a bagel?
Well, let's give you a bagel from the ones you brought for your birthday.
That sounds reasonable.
Actually half, John, because I'm going to have the other half.
Just to let you know, Andrea threw me a clementine, which I have to tell you, this is the smallest clementine I have ever seen in my life.
Do you want the medium size?
I'll take any size other than this.
Here's the medium size one.
That looks like a golf ball, an orange golf ball.
And just quickly, because we have a lot to do, are you ready?
Sorry.
Happy birthday to you. That's it. We don't have time.
Thank you.
That's it. No, we don't have time for the little song. That's right. Time now for the top six at six.
Now it's time to move on to a little something we call
the Steve Cochran
April 7th.
Huh? Presents the top six at six.
I wanted it to be special for you.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yes.
Six.
Lucky guess.
My favorite number is six.
Top six at six on 720 WGN.
We should just do a video how guys celebrate other guys' birthdays. When's your birthday? April 7th. I kind of missed it.
Do you guys take each other to lunch? I'm just curious.
Not often.
All right.
No.
Not for birthdays.
Oh, okay.
No. Anyway, happy birthday. It is John, isn't it?
Actually, no. This is awkward.
President Trump fired the FBI director as we get to the top six at six here, James Comey. A tad abruptly yesterday. And we got a ton to say about this, but this is after terminating the top official leading a criminal investigation into whether Trump's advisors colluded with the Russian government to influence the election. A million questions here, very few answers, but I can't not tell you right now my favorite part of the story. Last night on the White House grounds, once you have White House clearance as a reporter, you can pretty much be on the White House grounds at any time. You have to, you know, clear the front gate. But there's always an opportunity for you to stand up on the lawn because it's a 24-hour news situation. So if you were, say, walking by the White House at 3 o'clock in the morning, you may see TV lights on the White House lawn because somebody's shooting a TV spot.
Right,
or shot there.
A stand-up right or something.
Yeah. Sean Spicer was apparently leaving the White House, and reporters were shouting questions at him. And a direct quote from the story, he hid in the bushes.
That's true. And that's unbelievable. I think he was like completely unhinged yesterday.
When your press secretary hides in the bushes, it's a bad day. And you know what? Question me. I'll be Sean Spicer again. Question me about anything, and I'll give you the direction.
Sean, is it supposed to
wait?
Sean, Sean, do you think today you're going to be actually answering questions for us?
You can't see me. I'm in the bushes.
No,
I'm in the bushes. You can't see me. Everyone, reporters, cover your eyes. Count to 10, and I'll ask your questions.
It's like peekaboo with a little kid.
Oh, my God. Oh. More, obviously, on this. One day after the FBI director had been overseeing the probe, gets whacked. Donald Trump has just one event on his public schedule, an Oval Office meeting with the Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov. That's right. The Russian Foreign Minister is coming in the day after he fires the director of the FBI leading the investigation into whether or not he had corrupt ties to Russia. Can we reschedule this one?
Do you think, though, seriously, at any point Donald Trump thinks that this might look strange or might be sort of a conflict of interest?
Well, it's part of the story. He supposedly thought this would be a big hit on Broadway. He supposedly thought that this would somehow play well with Democrats and others. But again, we'll get into it. President Trump has also approved a plan to arm Syrian Kurds so they can participate in the battle to retake Raqqa from the Islamic State. This is important because Raqqa is the presumed capital of ISIS, presumed by ISIS. The strategy has drawn a lot of deep opposition from Turkey for their own interests there. Eight Democratic senators, led by Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts, called for a federal investigation into whether Mr. Icahn, Carl Icahn, the investor, violated laws against insider trading and market manipulation in his role as a special advisor to President Trump, because he went in, had a meeting with Trump, and then particular interests that he had related to Wall Street, which we can also get in later, suddenly became very profitable in his favor. Not unlike the fact that the Kushner family was selling EB-5 visas in China over the weekend, a day after the president approved the continuation of the controversial EB-5 visa, where if you give me 10 jobs in America and $500,000, I'll make you an American citizen.
Right. No. Mm-hmm. It's like a pay for play.
It's not good as what it is. Let's see. Oh, Chicago Public Schools won't end the school year early, but the system is still short hundreds of millions of dollars. Fundraiser. Isn't that what we do in schools? Fundraiser.
Bake sale.
And you raise the price, right? You're selling, say, the candy from the boxes that the parents always bring in and force other people at work to buy. Mm-hmm. Instead of $2 a candy bar, they're $250 a candy bar. I mean, come on.
Well, maybe
$10,000, cupcakes.
That's what I'm talking about.
I'd say get Chance involved. Chance just gave $1 million to CPS.
Yeah, well, Chance.
Common.
Yeah, Chance. Well, why is it always got to be my people?
I know. Well, because your generosity.
It's just unbelievable. At any rate, with $1 million short of dollars needed to make a pension payment due at the end of June, because the state still owes CPS about $467 million, this all goes back to whether or not the Illinois politicians in Springfield will ever have a budget. Oh, and in addition to that, speaking of Springfield, Mike Madigan agreed to do an interview. Not with me.
I heard this.
But with Patty Vasquez. She did it yesterday in Springfield. She's worked very hard to make that happen. The interview, I believe, is posted now, isn't it?
It is at WGNRadio.com.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So if you are inclined, check that out. We'll talk to Patty about it later this week. And then there's this. To celebrate the 60th anniversary of the Grammys, the event's going to be held at Madison Square Garden in January of 2018. That actually sounds pretty cool. It's 6:19. The Steve Cochran Show continues, and Pat Brady will join us next to talk about Trump's version of the Nixonian Saturday Night Massacre as we start to break this apart and give you some way to wrap your head around it. We'll do that with Pat coming up. Before we get to that, Mary, you with the cars.
The Steve Cochran Show.
There's little doubt that FBI Director Comey and the great special agents of the FBI will be able to collect more than enough evidence to garner indictments against Hillary Clinton.
I respect the fact that Director Comey was able to come back after what he did. I respect that very much.
And it took guts for Director Comey to make the move that he made in light of the kind of opposition he had, where they're trying to protect her from criminal prosecution. You know that.
I have respect that the FBI has given it a second chance.
The FBI, and I give them a lot of credit.
Good job by the FBI.
They're fighting forces that they're not supposed to be fighting.
Great job by Jake putting that montage together. The insanity of the letters that came yesterday in regards to Comey. I mean, you know, the story is just so bizarre. James Comey finds out while he's in L.A. addressing other FBI agents, looking over their shoulders, he sees that scroll on the bottom of the TV of the news networks that were playing behind him that he was fired. At least I got walked to the bathroom.
No kidding.
And the rest of the insanity is Jeff Sessions is a part of the letter for being. This is the same guy, the attorney general, who recused himself from all things related to the Russia investigation, who signs off on the letter to fire James Comey, who's in charge of the Russian investigation. And for every Trump surrogate who stood up yesterday to defend him and say, no, this is about Hillary. Did you hear the sound we just played? Why would Donald Trump now take up for Hillary? Why would he suddenly, a day after Sally Yates' testimony and a week after James Comey's testimony, why would he suddenly be concerned with Hillary Clinton? It's preposterous, and you sound like fools when you go that line. Pat Brady joins us now. Good morning, Pat.
Morning, guys.
Pat and I spoke last night about this, and we both reminded ourselves not to pat each other on the back that we were right all along, because Teflon Donnie has been able to get out of a lot of scrapes, but how does he get out of this self-made one?
He's lost his mind on this one, and I, a guy that used to work in the Justice Department, I don't understand it, but the headline, and you saw it blaring since 3 o'clock this morning, is that Trump fired the guy that was investigating. To bring it down a little bit, it's the equivalent of Eddie Johnson, the police superintendent, announcing that he's investigating Rahm Emanuel. 2 weeks later, Rahm fires him for something he praised him for 6 months ago. It's just, it's so ridiculous. In the pretext of the letters he got from the deputy attorney general and the attorney general. And remember what Jeff Sessions, why he recused himself? Because he met with the Russian spy at the Republican National Convention.
Yep.
I mean, that's how involved he is with this Russian nonsense. So this wait and see, and what we're talking about last night, we got to caution because he's Teflon Don, but this is starting to evolve very badly for him. And the press accounts I read this morning were that Trump did this because he wanted this Russian investigation shut down. If there's affirmative proof of that, he's got big problems.
Pat, this is so maddening on every single level and in a completely nonpartisan way. What happens from here on out? And as far as the investigation goes, this is just going to increase calls for a special prosecutor, is it not? And does Trump, I asked Steve this earlier, does Trump at any point think that, you know, this might be a conflict I'm meeting with the Russian ambassador today? Does he care?
Yeah, he's got Sergei Lavrov coming to the White House today, the day after he does this.
To answer that question, probably not. But anybody that would write that letter that he put out yesterday probably doesn't think such deep thoughts as conflict of interest, or maybe what we've been talking about for 2 years. This guy has no respect for the institutions of government, whether they're judges, whether it's the media, which is not an institution of government, but an important institution, whether it's the Congress. He does not see the importance of the FBI director and that FBI director's perceived independence for the functioning of a democracy. There's a reason that we didn't get the FBI until the 30s and 40s. People didn't want a national police force.
Right.
Because they didn't want somebody, some president, directing the national police force to do bad things. That's why they have a 10-year term and they're supposed to be completely independent. So it's very scary. But Andrew, to your question, I think, as a guy that worked in the Justice Department, I think this investigation lives. No matter who they put in there, it could be more difficult. And if you're seeing the reactions of the career agents today at the FBI, they're infuriated that a guy that they really liked was fired in this way. So I think the investigation goes on just because it's been so high profile.
Well, and he lit a fire under it in an attempt to tamp it down, which is exactly what this is, an attempt to make it go away. He lit a fire under it and put Klieg lights on it. It is now going to be amped up to another level. Now, it doesn't matter who he appoints to the chair. He could appoint the Sheriff Clark from Milwaukee, who's farther right than Trump would ever even consider. He could appoint the who's the sheriff out of Arizona?
Oh, Arapio. Arapio.
Yeah, the old guy that kept getting in trouble for his prisons out there. He could appoint that guy. Look, he could appoint Barney Fife. Whoever he appoints, the investigation has to live, because politically and literally for the good of the people, this will go forward. All the congressmen, all the Republicans were either being quiet or even defending him this morning, are going to go back and they're going to hear from the good people that voted for Trump, believing he was who he said he was, who has now shown the hypocrite that he actually is on every single level, who knows that he is now running from justice. This is the same thing we've been saying for a year and a half. If you're innocent, let the investigation run its course. He has now done 180 degrees different from that, and it's trying to kill the investigation. And I don't know how anybody could defend him. And a guy you know and a guy you ran in a couple of weeks ago, Sean Spicer, literally, Pat, was hiding in the bushes last night from the reporters on the White House grounds.
Yeah, it's indefensible. And the pretext of the firing, it makes no sense and nobody believes it. It was so, I think, because of the reaction you saw, or lack of reaction you saw from Spicer and the rest of the West Wing crew, I think Trump just sat here kind of like that tweet, sketched out that fourth grade letter and sent it out. I'm not sure if I guarantee you no press person saw that letter go out. And it was delivered by his private security guard.
I would guess Reince Priebus didn't see it.
The way it was written, then, and here's another point, maybe minor, but it could be huge. What is he doing saying that he's talking to the FBI director about an active investigation?
It's
that
not minor.
Big fat, right. It's a big fat no-no.
Right.
That violates about 50 different rules of protocol from the prosecution and from the executive branch. If this were Richard Nixon, the place would be going nuts.
I would liken that almost to Bill Clinton talking to Loretta Lynch on a much different level during the campaign.
Frankly, it's a much more serious level.
Right.
Because we weren't talking about Bill Clinton being the president of the United States at that point. But to use your example, Pat, it goes back to Rahm then talks to the police superintendent and goes, "You're not investigating me, right? You're not investigating me, right?" The idea that Comey would answer that question once, let alone three times, is ridiculous.
And Eddie Johnson wouldn't answer it if Rahm asked it. No police officer that has any degree of experience would ever answer that question. And nobody that is not worried about getting indicted would ever ask it.
So before we get too far ahead of ourselves and over our skis, as we like to say around here, there's nothing good about an impeachment of a president. It's only happened twice in our history. And both times, it rocked the economy. It rocked our security. It's a bad, bad chapter. But the country is more important than one guy. And the one guy that is in that office now thinks he's more important than the country. So something has to be done. And the right thing would be if he stepped aside and let Mike Pence take over, and the Republicans would still have control of Congress, and they would also have a Republican president to calm all of this down and try to move it forward. That's where I believe this is going. The question is, what will Trump do in the meantime, and how do you control the next completely crazy response from him within the powers of the president that he has?
A constitutional crisis, which is what an impeachment is a terrible thing. It's terrible. We lived through it, and I remember it was terrible. So I hope it. But this guy, I don't think completely understands anything about the role that he occupies as president. No regard for anything other than his agenda and his pettiness. He's upset, according to the press reports, because that Comey didn't defend him on the statements he made about the wiretap on President Obama. I mean, this is how this guy's mind operates. It's not a commander-in-chief. It's a reality TV show star, and that's how he's acting.
It's never been about this country. It's always been about Donald Trump from the moment he announced until now. And you cannot have someone sitting in the White House who thinks about himself first in every single decision. And that's what he does. You know, we're not making this stuff up.
It's blown opportunities, too. There's an opportunity to get, and things need desperately to be done that he could get done, but this is going to suck all the air out of the room for the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, well, and if this goes to the long-form version of this, to some, impeachment push, we're talking about months and months. You know, for anybody that's old enough, and you and I are barely old enough to remember this, but if anybody that's old enough to remember the summers of 73 and 74, it was endless and not good.
Yeah, that's going to take it'll be interesting to watch today the reactions of the politicians. Remember Nixon, when the Republicans actually were along with the Democrats after the Saturday Night Massacre, really pushing for Nixon to go. I haven't heard much yet. So today will be interesting to see how people start reacting.
There's no defense of this. There's absolutely no defense of this. It makes no sense. It's an absolute lie. It's an embarrassment, but more importantly, it borders on criminal. It may well be criminal as this goes forward. So hold on to your hats. It's far from over. And this ain't a touchdown dance. This is sadness because this is a bad day. But at some point, you got to stand up and go, we have to do what we have to do. The country is more important than any individual.
It also renews calls for why the president is allowed to have this unbelievable power over the FBI director.
Yeah, well,
any president.
Yeah, we may need to take a look at the flowchart. Pat, we'll check back in with you. This could change in an hour.
All right. See you guys. Have a good day. Thanks.
Sponsored by New Balance Chicago. We'll get to Andrea next.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Chicago, Chicago, that toddling town.
Interesting idea for Chicago residents in just a second. Much more Chicago, coming up on the story of the day and the month. I know it's early in the month, maybe the story of the year. the FBI director, tossed out by President Trump. And this isn't good news. Kellyanne Conway's back. She's been paraded out last night, and now she's doing the morning talk shows. We have Lanier Richardson standing by on the phone. I'm going to go to Lanier here, co-founder and CEO of Chicago Trend. And I think it's a very cool idea. Lanier, how are you?
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Doing fine. So what you want is Chicago residents to take what amounts to less than 10 minutes to complete a survey that will take care of areas of your life in your neighborhood that maybe is a desert for something. Maybe you no longer have a dry cleaner nearby or a grocery. This is how, by the way, this is in part how Whole Foods ended up in Inglewood.
Oh, yeah.
Because there wasn't a grocery store.
That's right.
A decent grocery store you could go to. So, Lanier, how does it work?
Look, we have a survey online. It's the Chicago Trend Shopper's Choice Survey. And our goal is to use the data from the survey to communicate with retailers, you know, what's missing in neighborhoods, which neighborhoods would respond to retail amenities and investment, what type of retail will be most effective in a neighborhood, what type of retail will be viable. And we think, you know, we're working shoulder to shoulders with retailers to, you know, produce and analyze the survey data so that we can make Chicago neighborhoods stronger.
Lanier, it seems to, the Whole Foods in Inglewood, the Mariano's, the new one, the huge one in Bronzeville, they've been so successful. Are the retailers responding positively to this too? Are they saying, hey, you know what, we want to know where you want us?
Well, we have the retailers at the table. We created this strategy, which we called the Retailer Coalition of the Willing. It was to engage with the retailers, to have them feel like they're part of making, you know, making the sausage here in a way and responding to it and commenting on it. And so the answer is yes, we want the retailers, and the retailers are really at the table. When you look at the developments in Bronzeville and Inglewood and Pullman and Little Village and Tulsa, all of that is a result of retailers starting to understand that there really is potential in the neighborhoods, and many of the neighborhoods are poised to continue to grow.
Yeah, and by the way, this is not just troubled neighborhoods or economically disadvantaged neighborhoods. This could affect anybody, right?
That's a great, great point, Steve. So this is, our work is around which neighborhoods are poised for growth,
right?
Which neighborhoods are, you know, have a good core of existing residents that they want to keep, and which neighborhoods are poised for attracting new people. And some neighborhoods that's young professionals, and other neighborhoods that's young families, and some neighborhoods that's, people that are retired. The question is, what retail in those corridors and in those neighborhoods will help attract more people and will be productive?
You know, Andre, I think this applies to your general neighborhood. I mean, you go to the South Loop, there's plenty of apartments.
Right.
But there's overbuilding, I think, to some extent in your general neighborhood where there could be more retail.
Completely agree. In fact, I was looking for a shoe repair service because I love this pair of boots that I have, Lanier. And somebody said, you know what, go 18th Street Pilsen. There's a great shoe repair place. Now I go there all the time.
Right.
But I didn't even know because there wasn't a service like this at this time for people to say, you know, hey, go here.
And let's face it, Lanier, we all want it easy. We all want it easy. We all want it down the street, don't we?
And that's what I mean by retail amenities. So, you know, there's a whole lot of headlines about the state of the retail industry. People are calling retail apocalypse and retail disruption and Amazon. But there's still a core set of retail amenities that make a neighborhood special, whether it's the shoe repair or the dry cleaner or the ethnic restaurant or the boutique that people love. Those type of in the grocery store. What's interesting about the grocery store, I just read a report that in 2016 was the first year that spending at restaurants exceeded spending at grocery stores. Restaurants now, and you can imagine people eating out, they come home, they get prepared food from the Whole Foods counter,
right,
or the Mariano's, you know, hot bar. So restaurants are increasingly, you know, important to neighborhoods. And so getting more of the sit-down restaurants and the fast casual restaurants to, you know, find opportunities, to find spots. It's great. And some of our hometown favorites, like, you know, Home Run Inn. You know, we spent some time last week with the, with the developers and operators of Home Run Inn. They're looking for new locations in Chicago.
That's good news for Sam.
South Loop,
Chicago favorite.
Yeah, Sandberg's Nuts for Home Run and Pizza.
How about right across the street from us?
Home Run and Pizza.
Michigan Avenue, yeah.
Well, set up in the green room. Set up in the green room. It's more convenient.
Right.
All right, Linear, so where do they find, folks in Chicago listening, where do they find the survey?
So very simple. We have our website is chicagotrend.com, T-R-E-N-D.com.
That is pretty easy.
It's on the first page. It takes 12 minutes, 11 or 12 minutes. But, again, the data.
I said less than 10, so work fast.
Right, right. That's right. The data that comes from this will certainly help make Chicago stronger and make more neighborhoods in Chicago neighborhoods of choice.
ChicagoTrend.com. Thank you, sir. Let's get to Mary with the traffic, and we'll come back. More on the Trump debacle, the firing of James Comey. And, again, if you voted for Trump and you're starting to question that vote, you weren't wrong at the time that that's the way you felt. What has turned out to be wrong is the guy you elected is completely not trustworthy and happens to be the president of the United States. In other words, it's not your fault. And I mean that. It's 6:50. It's Steve Cochran. And when are we going to hear from the president other than a tweet?
We should hear from him at some point today, don't you think? He's supposed to meet with the Russian ambassador.
He should have spoken last night.
Yeah, he should have, instead of tweeting about it.
Yeah, don't hide, Mr. President. Come out and stand behind what you did. And stop telling us it's some guy that got approved 2 weeks ago that you're suddenly listening to with your open mind. Ridiculous. It is 6:56. We're going to play you some of the audio from the video of us all singing in our cars. But in the meantime, I want John DaCosta to jump on here. Today you're going to tell us the first finalist for karaoke?
I'm going to tell you the first winner, the first finalist. Yes, that will happen later today.
And karaoke, the contest, again, stolen by James Corden, lawsuit pending.
Okay.
Karaoke, the contest, again, we'll have John eventually pare it down to three people who sing in their car. Those three people will meet in the WGN parking lot in their own cars, and they will sing the winner eventually getting great prizes. Man, I got to write that down. Get prizes. It seems to be a very important part of the contest. But the joy of singing in your car. We all do it. Don't act like you don't. Put to contest form here on the program. People still want to enter. What do? They can sing live today, later.
They can sing live today, later, yes.
But or?
Or they can actually send their clip, their audio clip or video clip, to M. Sandberg, S-A-N-D-B-E-R-G, at WGNradio.com. Remember, if you're singing in your car, try not to be moving.
Right.
You know, or not
keep
to hold
park.
It. Yes,
but
right.
We don't need to put play ours because we already have a bunch of great entries, right?
No, we will play ours.
Oh,
yes,
you've got to play yours.
Texters from the 847. While I turn Cochran off again after a lifetime, you people are losing my wife and I. Texter from the 219. BS. They knowingly elected an inexperienced reality TV star narcissist. The people who voted for Trump are responsible for this. Well, by the math, yes. But again, I go under the theory that if someone lies to you constantly and you believe them because you trusted them, that's on them, not on you. The people who voted for Trump believed he was somebody he's clearly not. So I don't think it's the fault of the people that believed him. Yes, by the Electoral College standards, they elected him, but you believed in somebody who lied to your face again and again and again and again. A country is more important than Donald Trump, and Donald Trump has never understood that. That's why we're in this position. A couple of minutes before 7, more coming up on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show, 720 WGN.
7:11 in the morning, you know, with the problems in the White House. I don't want to scare you any more than you may already be rocked this morning by what's going on. But you don't want to wag the dog situation. You don't want this president to do something drastic to show how tough he is and how needed he is and to go after the little knucklehead. What did McCain call him? The little crazy fat kid from North Korea?
Right, the crazy fat kid. You know, Wag the Dog is so timely, that movie with De Niro and
Don't
Dustin
watch
Hoffman.
It this week.
No, I was going to
no,
say.
No, don't watch it this week.
Show a special screening of it.
But you don't want that, right? So are there lessons that can be learned from those in the past? I still, to this day, to the point of watching Hogan's Heroes, I'm fascinated by what happened in World War II. I always will be. And joining us on the phone now to give us a bit of a history lesson, and by the way, he's got the accent to pull it off, is Giles Milton. He is the only Giles on the program this morning. Good morning, Mr. Milton.
Hi there. How are you?
I am fine, sir. How are you?
Good, thanks. Good, thanks.
The book is Churchill's Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, The Mavericks Who Plotted Hitler's Defeat. Now, if you were lucky enough to be a tourist in London at any point, the Churchill War Museum is a fantastic place to go to get a sense of this history. But you've uncovered stuff here which I'd never heard before.
Yeah, this is a completely secret story from the Second World War. It's a story of a small group of mavericks, of eccentrics, who Churchill got on board to develop a secret, nasty, dirty guerrilla warfare against the Nazis. Not written about, not known about, and it really is an extraordinary story.
These are six men. How did he find the six men?
They were recruited. They were men. All of them had one thing in common. They were brilliant lateral thinkers. They could think outside the box. So where other people found problems, they found solutions, and particularly in how to deal with Hitler's army, which, of course, had swept across Europe, conquering country after country. They needed to fight, somehow find a way to fight a really dirty war of sabotage behind enemy lines.
Now, each one of these characters is interesting in their own right, and boy, is this a movie. One was hired to build a dirty bomb to take out the Holocaust architect, who I believe, wasn't it Reinhard Heydrich?
That's correct. Heydrich was, of course, one of Hitler's closest comrades. He was known as the Butcher of Prague because he was put in charge of Czechoslovakia. And he was a complete monster. And so the British hatched a plot to assassinate him. But this was not easy because Heydrich traveled everywhere with an armed guard in an armor-plated Mercedes. So one of these six brilliant mavericks that Churchill had brought on board was tasked with designing a bespoke bomb, a grenade, that would be powerful enough to tear through the armor plating of this Mercedes and literally shatter its way upwards, forcing shrapnel into Heydrich's body and killing him. So this one rather elderly pensioner figure designed this bomb, and it was duly used to devastating effect.
And again, this is, you know, we talk about dirty bombs. This is maybe the first, but a very early version of what amounts to a dirty bomb, a bomb that goes off that could be filled with everything from washers to nickels to nails to whatever you would equate with a dirty bomb. And in this case, as described by you, getting the job done. Weren't there some attractive women that were like ancillary to this group?
Yeah, what was very interesting about this secret, the title of my book, incidentally, The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, is actually Churchill's own phrase. He called it his Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. And right from the outset, he wanted many, many women to work for it. He found women to be extremely reliable and dependable when dealing with top secret projects. You've got to realize that the things they were planning to do, the assassinations and the acts of guerrilla warfare, were very verging on the extremely illegal. So he brought on these women to help with this running of this organization. And yes, some extraordinary stories. I think we all think of the Second World War as being a kind of male, macho male war, but not when it came to the dirtiest war of all, this secret war of sabotage, actually women played a key role.
In talking about all of the gentlemen, the ungentlemanly characters in the book, Heydrich, Fairbairn, I'm picturing actors playing them. Has there been any talk of a movie or putting this on the big screen, Giles?
But not the big screen, but the small screen. We've just sold, actually, the TV rights. So the idea is to produce a long-running series. So hopefully, give it a year or so, maybe a bit longer, and hopefully this will all come to our TV screens.
Well, I'm sorry, Giles. It's got to be a movie as well.
Yeah.
We're going to have to make a movie out of this.
I'm very happy if it's a movie as well.
Yes.
If you know anyone that might want to make it into a movie, do call me.
Who just played Churchill? Somebody just played Churchill in a historical piece. Was it John Lithgow?
Yes, it was on The Crown.
Yeah, John Lithgow was great.
Was awesome.
I think Anthony Hopkins would be a good Churchill, too.
It would be a good
Don't
Churchill.
Don't you think?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, if he could play Nixon, he could probably play Churchill. tell us about William Fairbairn. Andrea just mentioned Fairbairn. This is an interesting guy, too.
Yeah, William Fairbairn was an extraordinary character. He looked like an Anglican vicar. He was a pensioner. He wore thick glasses. And he was charged with setting up what was called the killing school. And this is where Churchill wanted all his would-be saboteurs and guerrillas to learn the dark arts of killing. Killing with your bare hands, killing with knives, and killing with pistols. And Fairburn had previously worked, he led the anti-gangster squad in Shanghai, which was probably the most dangerous city in the world at the time. He was brought on board. He became one of the key figures in this Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, and he taught many Brits, but also Americans, how to kill. Because after serving in Britain for a while, he was poached by the Americans and went over to America to teach the dark arts of killing.
And Fairbairn, again, the description is important because who would you suspect less other than an old guy who's heavy? He's a fat boy, an old fat guy. It's the world's leading silent killer. I mean, it's brilliant.
It's extraordinary. And in fact, when he turned up in London, he came back from Shanghai and turned up to London, and he wanted to get a job in the regular army. And when he started talking about his techniques for killing, the regular army were utterly appalled. They said, there's no way this man can have any role in the regular army. But he was immediately poached by Churchill and given this job of teaching people how to kill in very nasty ways.
We barely scratched the surface, but again, all of them shared one vision, and that was the defeat of Hitler. And in a time where we're worried about, again, quoting John McCain, the crazy fat kid from North Korea, you got to hope that there are people in the world who can do the dirty job again, whether they're in North Korea now or not. I think it's a fascinating book. I wish you nothing but success. I'm going to try to find you a movie producer and have them call you, Giles.
That'll be great. Well, I'll be waiting your call.
Thank you, sir. Again, I want to remind everybody, you know, get two copies because you're careless. You lose the first one, and then William Fairbairn will come, and you don't want him coming to your house.
No, the execution school. Yeah. Oh, no, that was Fairbairn.
Churchill's Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, The Mavericks Who Plotted Hitler's Defeat. Can't wait to read it completely. I've only skimmed it at this point. At 7:19, more on, the firing of James Comey coming up. John, we ran out of time. What were you going to ask Fairbairn? I mean, Fairbairn. What were you going to ask Giles?
No, I was just curious what the time frame was. The Bletchley Circle, which is all about women that, you know, actually decoded all of the German messages. But we didn't find out about it until like 40 years later because they couldn't talk about
right,
it.
So right.
What was the time frame for this?
We got to think early in the war, right?
Well, what I mean is, when did this information become
public? Oh, when did it become public? When did it become known? That's a good question.
Yeah.
I'll give you Giles' number. Call him back.
Okay.
Yeah. At 7:20, let's get traffic.
The Steve Cochran Show.
This investigation must be run as far away as possible from this White House and as far away as possible from anyone that President Trump has appointed. Given the way the president fired Director Comey, any person who he appoints to lead the Russia investigation will be concerned that he or she will meet the same fate as Director Comey if they run afoul of the administration.
The concern is there's confusion about how a special prosecutor could be appointed, because as a special prosecutor law stands, the normal appointing process is by the president and approved by the attorney general, or suggested by the attorney general and seconded by the president. I don't think that's going to work.
Well, no.
Call me crazy.
No. And you know what? The tie is interesting, too, because you had the acting attorney general who actually went to the president with the whole Michael Flynn situation. She gets fired. Now she's on Capitol Hill testifying. So it becomes a he said, who can you trust situation.
Well, let's back it up even further. If you go back to January and when the president took office and the Michael Flynn stuff rolled out, this is actually the third firing by the Trump administration of someone looking into Russia. Or Sally Yates, as you mentioned.
Right.
The U.S. attorney, Preet Bharara, mm-hmm. who was assured he would keep his job from New York, was looking into Russian ties by the administration, but more directly into a Russian businessman in New York who may or may not have had ties to it, who ended up dead after falling out of a building.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So he ends up getting fired, and now James Comey. You don't fire the people, as president of the United States or anybody, you don't fire the people who are looking into a crime you're accused of. Because guess what? it makes you look like you're guilty.
I'm just surprised the head of counterintelligence, be it the FBI or CIA, DEA, whatever it would be, wouldn't have approval from all three legislative branches. Not just the executive, but the judicial and the congressional should have to weigh in as well.
Listen, we've had to rewrite a few things lately. We got, like I said earlier, we got to look at the flowchart. Yeah. Jeff Sessions was controversially nominated and approved as the attorney general, the most important lawman in the land. The Justice Department oversees the FBI. Jeff Sessions is James Comey's most direct boss. Jeff Sessions came out and said, listen, and he did it in his Barney Fife voice, I'm going to recuse myself from the Hillary Clinton stuff and also from the Donald Trump stuff.
Right, and the Russian stuff.
Yeah, well, the Donald Trump stuff and it is the Russian stuff. Yeah, I should probably call it the Russian stuff.
Yeah, since there's so much stuff.
Yeah, so I'm going to recuse myself from all of that. Jeff Sessions then is seconded by an assistant attorney general who had just approved a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. Now, this assistant who just came out a couple of weeks ago is generally pretty well thought of. I think it was a 96-4 final count and being approved by the Senate. And he ends up drafting the letter, but Sessions signs off on it. If you recuse yourself from an investigation, you can't sign off on the letter that's about that investigation. You don't sign anything. If the president says you have to sign the letter, you go, Mr. President, I can't. Let me explain to you what recusal means.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There's a violation. Secondly, in the letter that Trump sends to Comey directly, in that letter, he says, thanks for telling me three different times I wasn't being investigated by you. It never happened. If Comey said that once, he's ethically in he's violating the ethics of his office. He certainly didn't say it three times. Once again, it's Trump going, hey, by the way, I'm innocent. I'm going to write it in a letter, and then you're going to read the letter, and you're going to believe me because I'm President Trump. No, we're not going to believe you because you're Donald Trump.
We shouldn't be weighing in on any of this anyway.
Well, you can't.
This is an ongoing investigation.
You can't weigh in on it. Mm-mm. In addition to that, the way that Comey was fired was by Trump's longtime main bodyguard is delivering a letter, or the cache of letters now, to Comey at the FBI. Well, he's not at the FBI.
No,
he's in
LA.
Los Angeles.
Yeah.
So the letter gets sent to Los Angeles, but before they send the letter, this is leaked because it's Washington. Comey's addressing LA FBI agents.
Right.
And he's answering questions about the Sally Yates testimony. Mm-hmm. And this is a private meeting. This is FBI agents and the boss.
Right.
And he's going over his testimony and also the Sally Yates testimony and where the FBI stands on all of it. And one of the most important field offices, the LA office. And the TVs behind him, much like the monitors here in studio, we have all, several televisions in here. The news scrolls at the bottom. So while Comey's speaking, he looks up, sees his name, James Comey fired by Donald Trump.
Yeah, he found out he got fired by the television.
Yeah, by TV.
Right.
So he comes home last night. He will speak, and he will likely be called to testify again. Now, as Citizen Comey, I think he's probably got a few things to say.
Oh, I think so, too. And will he ask for immunity? Because now he has to.
Well, all of his integrity has been put in question.
Yep.
And this guy's had a career. Andrew McCabe now steps in as the temporary head of the FBI. He has his own controversial problems politically in Washington, partly because he's married to a Democrat. So the Republicans have an issue with him because that's how they roll. So Jeff Sessions recuses himself. He's still involved. How separate was this from Reince Priebus and Sean Spicer? Well, Sean Spicer last night on the White House grounds was seen hiding in some bushes to avoid questions from reporters about what happened. By all accounts, Trump didn't talk this out with his people. Only a few people knew, much like the original travel ban order. And in that tight circle, his temper tantrum went on from last week to this week. He apparently actually thought the Democrats would welcome this, but he writes a letter, and the letter from the attorney general, which he says he had to follow, the guy who just got in 2 weeks ago, says that because of how Comey treated Hillary Clinton, there can't be any more of this, and Comey's lost the faith, the trust of not just his own people, but of the people in Washington, the people of the country. It took CNN about 3 minutes to pull the video up, and we'll play the audio for you as well. We have a montage of it that Jake put together of Trump defending Comey and high-fiving himself all over the place because Comey was coming down on Hillary. You can't have it both ways. You can't say, I was for it during the campaign. Now I'm against it, and Hillary needs to be protected. If I'm, I know Hillary Clinton's in the woods in a tree fort somewhere, but she had to be laughing her behind off last night.
Oh, completely.
What, you're defending me now, Donald?
Completely.
Give me a friggin' break.
This is going to be a great Hollywood movie in 10 years or so.
I don't know if it'll be funny even then.
I was going to say, will it be a comedy or a drama, though?
Yeah, or what's the one where you just cry?
A rom-com?
I don't know. It's just not good. So where do we stand this morning? We still have not heard from the president outside of tweets. He retweeted a Drudge Report list of 10 scandals under James Comey's watch at the FBI. Oh, well, then you were right. I'm sorry. If you're retweeting something from the Drudge Report, I'm way off base here. You're right. Go ahead. Keep lying. And as this continues, Mike Pence is sitting, waiting in the wings, going, what's happening next? Because if I'm Mike Pence, I wake up this morning and go, this is not good. This is headed down a very bad road. But importantly, the only one out there defending the president this morning that we've seen so far is Kellyanne Conway. There have been a few Republican surrogates who are the same types they trot out on the news networks all the time.
She's back.
But Kellyanne Conway is out defending him this morning. The president has gone too far. And again, he is not as important as this country. And he's never understood that. Every president prior to him has understood that. That's the weight of the office. You get in, you understand it's not about you. It's about the country and about you taking the honor and the ownership of running the country. Not running the country into the ground, running the country. He's gone too far. He lies too much. And now he has abused his power. And an abuse of power is an impeachable offense. And the best case scenario is he would have some shred of honor and step aside. The chance of that happening? 7:33, back with a big story next on 720 WGN.
Riding along in my automobile, my baby beside me at the wheel. I stole a kiss at the turn of a mile, my curiosity running wild. Cruising and playing the radio, with no particular place to go.
Steve Cochran Show continues just ahead of Officer Link Hampton. Good morning to Officer Robert Babinski from the Naperville Police Department. I talked to him last night a little bit about what LifeLock did for me. LifeLock caught a third attempt to steal my ID. Someone had opened up an account to take out a loan for a business called Cochran Plumbing. And the funniest part of the conversation is when someone said, are you opening a plumbing business called Cochran Plumbing? I go, that's funnier than you have any comprehension of.
Right.
There's no chance. Mm-mm. I said, I barely own and operate my own plunger.
And they said, thanks for that information.
But the loan was approved by a company in California and they were prepared to loan the money. My company in California would have been out the money. But it creates problems with your credit rating and all the other things that go with ID theft. And LifeLock caught it. LifeLock caught it, and that led me to Officer Babinski and some other law enforcement folks I need to deal with today. Who's backing cops more than this show, please?
That's right. That's right.
And for those of you who remember, one of the greats, he's still pretty, as Ali used to say about himself.
Oh, yeah, he is.
Officer Link Hampton joins us from an undisclosed location.
Yeah, thank God.
Good morning, sir.
How are you today?
I am doing just fine, and congratulations. You are one of the few that will join Dave Bennett soon on the WGN Radio Walk of Fame.
I'm in shock.
You actually sort of sound like
he's just hearing this for the first time.
Well, no, you know what's funny is that, I'm totally honored to be included, but it's just when my daughter called me, I'm down in Mexico right now, and she says, Link, I think you're going to be going to, the Walk of Fame. And I'm like, what? Really? And she goes, yeah, this is what they said on television. And I was like, really? I was like, okay. I'm still, trying to get that wrap around that whole thing because it's like, wow, that's a huge honor.
Pretty great.
It's way bigger than what I deserve.
Okay, you say you're in Mexico. Hey, Link, I love you. I know you always beat me on Words with Friends. I miss you. Every time. I can't get a win off this guy. Okay, so tell us, you're in Mexico. Tell everybody where you are, because when we tell people where you are and what you're doing now, they're like, oh, that's my life. That's what I want to do with my life.
Well, I'm actually not where we're at normally. Right now I'm in Oaxaca, Mexico, Oaxaca City, which is south of Mexico City. But normally I'm in a little town called San Pancho, which is north of Puerto Vallarta by about 45 minutes. And there we have a little cafe. We have a coffee shop that I had thought, oh, that would be a great retirement job where I'll sit around and, you know, maybe have a cup of coffee once in a while and that kind of thing. It's not like that. It's been totally insane. We've been working like dogs.
Right. Say you opened a business. You thought you were going to retire. You opened a business, and now everybody's going, hey, gringo, another latte.
Exactly, exactly. So, it's, you know, we're sort of now it's making us think, well, how long do we really want to do this?
Are your clientele, are they locals? Are they tourists?
It's everyone, actually. What we wanted to do, we wanted our coffee shop to really include everyone. So the local people, the tourists, and our town, I'd say when it's at its most crowded, there may be maybe 2,000 people there at a time. So it's like you never know who's going to come in the coffee shop. We talk about we have a little garden outside the coffee shop where people can sit and have their coffee. And you walk out there and all the languages that you hear from all around the world, you know, Italian and Spanish,
sure,
and German and everything. It's amazing. It's just pretty cool for a small little town.
Mary Vandeveld, say hi to Link.
Hi, Link. So happy to
Good
hear
morning,
from
Mary.
You. Oh, congratulations. You know, we miss you so much. And I miss your laugh the most, of course. But you got to tell people the repertoire you and Spike Odell had back in the day and, you know, how that came about.
Well, everybody wants to hear him sing, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course.
Okay.
Of course.
No, everybody wants to hear me sing, believe me.
Don't you want to hear Link sing?
I mean, look,
come on, Link.
Look, I'm looking at the text line right now. Are you still singing? Would love to hear you sing.
One song. Okay. One, two, three.
I totally gave that up. I gave that up.
All right, I don't want to scare you, officer, but we'll call Spike and tell him you wouldn't play along.
Link, wait. Turn on the lights. Turn on the sirens.
You know what Spike used to do to me, which used to drive me crazy, is that he'd say, like, wait, hold on a second, I got something you have to hear. And he'd start playing a song that I had one night sang, and I have no idea why I did it, but it will live in infamy. So it's one of those things where I can never live it down. And, boy, every time he'd play that, the hairs in the back of my neck would just stand up. I'd want to find a place to hide.
What song was that again? I forgot.
Oh, no. It was one that was called Brandy.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And there was, of course, there was Lady in Red.
Yeah, and if he would, he's going to do Brandy and Lady in Red at the Walk of Fame ceremony live.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, you want people to come to the ceremony, don't you?
looking forward to it. Coming up what day, Dave?
Thursday, May 25th.
Oh, no.
You got it rolling. Bill and Wendy are going to be hosting it. No, let it roll. Let it roll. Let it roll. Let it roll.
Never seen you looking so lovely as you did tonight.
Oh, thank you.
He's starting to hyperventilate.
Okay, ready? Here he goes. Here he goes. Go ahead, Link. Ready?
No, this isn't a hook. You're not a disc jockey.
Never seen so many men ask you if you wanted to dance.
All right, I have too much respect for you and the work you've done to force that on you.
Oh, it's okay.
Oh.
It's okay.
It's Officer Link. We look forward to seeing you. You are coming back for this, right?
Yes, I will be there.
Do you need help getting into the country?
Are you kidding me? Maybe. I may have to call you, so, you know, hopefully you can give me a number and get a hold of you. Things get kind of shaky.
Yeah, exactly.
Bring us, what do we need? Tequila? What else? Oh, tortillas? No.
As far as you know, we only need Link.
That's right.
Hey, Link, does it still help
cigars.
If we get pulled over by a state trooper, does it still help if we say we know you?
No. No. Probably not.
All right. Give us.
Probably not a good idea.
Give us the goodbye you used to give at the end of every Spike call.
What I used to say was always avoid the tight spots and the low lying area and drive safely.
That's right. That's right. It's a lesson for life. Avoid the tight spots and the low lying areas. All right, officers. Stand by. Stand by. I think he's busting up cartels left and right down there.
Hilarious. Sure, it's a coffee shop.
I always feel like he's on a covert mission of
some
sort.
Of course he is.
He always was.
You know where last place I saw him, both that he was working security at Ravinia and also at Welsh Ryan Arena at Northwestern for basketball.
Is that right?
Yeah,
no
yeah.
way.
Yeah.
Did he arrest you?
Till he left for Mexico. No, no, but all maybe right. he was working on
and what is your problem mission. With the state police that you need help with, Dave?
No, I was just that was just for the benefit okay. of everybody okay. on this.
Sure.
No, I just...
Well, as far as we know, you're fine.
Didn't they ticket you on the way to a remote once?
And now, live from traffic, here's Mary.
I think we should go to a remote at his place, at his cafe.
Watch out for your low-lying areas.
Let's do it. Yeah, that too.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah.
8:13, Dean Richards live from Channel 9. Good morning, my friend.
Good morning, good morning. How are you feeling today?
I feel fine, thank you. I do have some unfortunate news for you, however. Just moments ago, Donald Trump fired you. Donald Trump fired you from all things related to his administration.
I was investigating some things, so
yes.
I was expecting that might happen.
You're still real estate agent of the stars. You're still allowed to continue your entertainment critiques unless he leaves the presidency and returns to The Apprentice.
Back
and then you can't say anything about him.
Okay. You know what? I'm surprised with this whole thing that maybe it's happened and I just haven't seen it anywhere, but I watched quite a bit of coverage on this last night and I didn't see one outlet use a clip from The Apprentice where he would use his famous tagline, "You're fired."
Yeah, they're doing it this morning.
Because that's perfect.
They finally got around to it this morning, and now it's been a montage. And, of course, the genius Jake here, he put together a fabulous collection of Trump audio, which we'll be offering to the listeners for $9.95. Being sold, we can't sell them sound. Okay,
so.
All right.
You'll just give it away.
It's probably a Sinclair thing. All right, so Dean, where would you like to begin?
I would like to begin with the story about...
Really, time's up. While Dean was setting up the entertainment report, we ran out of time.
Oh, I wanted to start... Oh, now I remember. Another star has come out publicly and talked about not only her own health care, her own disclosure about her health, but is talking about the need for health care she feels, and that's Sarah Michelle Gellar, former star of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Right. Well, vampires need health care like anybody else.
I mean, you know, they're biting people and drinking blood and so forth. So you know that's important. She yesterday disclosed that she suffered postpartum depression after the birth of her first child and got through it, made it through it with help. You know, she and her husband, Freddie Prinze Jr., you know, they've been married for 15 years, by the way.
Good for them.
Yeah, I think that's amazing. But, you know, they're both doing very well, and they can certainly afford health care coverage. But she, like Jimmy Kimmel the other day, was talking about what about other people who can't afford help for things like postpartum depression. So she said that she told her followers, 1.5 million followers that she's got on social media, that if you feel that postpartum depression should not be a pre-existing condition, contact your congressperson. So,
well, there is the notion that you can't get postpartum depression without getting pregnant, and you can't get pregnant without having sex, and sex is not a pre-existing condition. So it would seem to make sense, wouldn't it?
I'm not a doctor, Steve, but yes, I would concur with it.
Wait, let me pick my head up because it just spun off of my neck and onto the ground.
I do like wearing those rubber gloves and snapping them once I got them on.
And before someone texts me and goes, you can get pregnant without having sex, you can do it through a doctor and through I don't care. You know what the point I was trying to make. Just trying to save you texting time.
Stop
Pay
texting.
Attention to the road.
Do you know who... Christopher Big Black Boykin is?
I actually do. Big Boy, yeah.
Big Boy from the MTV show Rob and Big.
Yeah.
6'6" guy, giant, gentle giant of a man, passed away yesterday, died of a heart attack.
Did not know that.
According to People magazine. He was starred for several seasons on this MTV show with skateboarder Rob Dyrdek.
Yep, me too.
With whom they lived together, and he was the bodyguard in the show.
I was the annoying neighbor.
Show we were the Mr. Were you the Mr. Roper of that series?
I was a guy that stuck his face over the fence, but you never saw all of
just
me.
Just saw your hat.
Yeah.
He is survived by a 9-year-old daughter.
That's
so,
sad.
So that's
sad deal.
Very sad.
The Tupac documentary, which again I'm prominently featured in. Who's directing that?
It's going to be directed by Steve McQueen. Not that one.
No.
Not the Papillon one.
Not the Papillon one who's been dead for like 25 years. Oscar winner Steve McQueen will be directing the documentary. He's the director who gave us 12 Years a Slave.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
A couple of years ago. He was nominated for Best Director. The movie won Best Picture that year, but he is working. There's been a lot of talk about this, a lot of efforts to get this done, lots of disputes.
Well, they couldn't find a director. They were looking East Side, West Side.
That's lots of, as we say in the hood, lots of beefs. Yeah. Between all the parties involved, and finally
they found him in the hizzy.
Steve McQueen was able to work out a deal with Tupac Shakur's estate, and he says that he will be bringing Tupac's unvarnished story to life.
Can you find a clean enough version of California to play it when Dean's done?
Oh my.
All the hits all the time.
Good luck with that.
Yeah. Remember our slogan, much less music, much more talk.
Hey, new owner Sinclair. I guess they don't own us yet, so
no.
A big FCC fine really wouldn't fall in their laps.
Yeah, so. Well, no, that's what the delay button's for. Former NBA star set to run for higher office. Which office, which star?
The office would be sheriff. He doesn't want to get into politics per se, but Shaquille O'Neal says he wants to run for sheriff.
Sheriff Shaq!
In either his hometown in Henry County, Georgia, or in Orange County, Florida, where he owns another firm, says he wants to try to build a better relationship between the community and law enforcement. But how would you like to be driving along? You're speeding a little bit in Henry County, Georgia. You get pulled over, and
Shaq unfolds himself out of the car.
That's going to be a little intimidating when he walks up to the car.
Why are you going so fast, man?
Asking for your license and registration.
Your license and registration.
In addition to 19 years in the NBA, Shaq also starred in the movie Freddy Got Fingered, by the way.
Shaq says, slow down.
We'll come back and talk about the Late Show reunion last night, Colbert and all his friends, and more with Dean in a second. First, here's Mary.
You'll be calling his name, Dean Richard, the entertainment.
Well, this is a surprise. President Trump just tweeted, Steve Cochran's a big loser, na-na-na-na-na-na.
So I think the wheels can't fix anyone's toilet.
I think the wheels continue to come off at the White House.
You afraid he's going to fire you? Because he can, you know.
Please. Get in line.
Hey, you know, I always like to mention when we get a nice compliment for our segment here every day.
Uh-huh.
And,
and you haven't gotten one?
Still looking for one. We're still hoping that at least one person likes this.
That's the point of the mention? We're trying to get a compliment?
We've got new owners now. We're really trying to kiss up as much as we possibly can. No, the Vice President and General Manager of WGN Television, Paul Rennie, yesterday specifically told me how much he enjoys when we do our French accents.
Was he being serious? There was no sense of sarcasm.
Yeah,
in
no,
at all?
I think he
okay,
was.
Good,
I think
good.
He was serious.
Bonjour, Paul Rennie.
You are the most handsome general manager we have ever had here at WGN.
We call you l'excellence.
Paul Rennie's on the line. He's saying, please stop.
We're going to send Paul Rennie our regular gift box of croissant.
And our DVD, The Best of the Frenchies.
Yes.
No fromage.
And we're also going to send him Kim Kardashian's jewelry. Yeah. We still have it.
Bonjour and merci.
I'm walking down a street in Paris, and I said goodnight to someone in the middle of the morning. And later that day, I said good morning to someone at night. So I'm never welcome in
You're
Paris again.
Crazy. That's why they hate us there.
Yeah. The fact that I can't manage three phrases.
Right. Every phrase, when I was there, all I ever said to people is, where's the library? It's the only sentence that I remember from high school French class. That I
La biblioteca?
Où est la bibliothèque?
Oh, wait, that's Spanish.
Is it?
All right, last night on Colbert, he had a reunion. Who showed up?
There was Jon Stewart, of course.
Sure, yeah. Mm-hmm.
John Oliver.
Oh, good.
You got your...
You watch that John Oliver thing on HBO?
I like that
that's
John
a
Oliver
funny show.
It's funny.
It's
and
an important show.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliantly insightful.
Man, it'd be great to have a staff of 35 working on 30 minutes a week. That'd be fun.
Right. Yeah, like your show. who else was there? Ed Helms was there.
Oh, cool.
Rob Corddry. And they sat around and they chatted and they did a funny flashback scene.
Thanks, like, Dave. Dave just got me a Diet Coke.
Thanks, Dave.
Sorry, go ahead.
Thanks, Dave. I'm okay. I don't need anything. I'm okay. Sat around and did a little chatting.
Which, any sound?
As a matter of fact, I think we do.
I'm not comfortable here. I don't feel comfortable.
I am perfectly comfortable.
I know
you
you're
there.
Comfortable. I don't feel comfortable. I'll tell you why I don't feel comfortable.
Why?
I've been reading about you. I've been seeing about you in the news. You have a potty mouth.
That I do. But might I say, I learned it from you, Dad.
The things that you say, even if they're crass, or even if they in some ways are not respectful enough to the office of the presidency, we can insult. He can injure. Like, it's the difference between insult and injury. And I, for the life of me, I do not understand why in this country we try and hold comedians to a standard we do not hold leaders to. It's bizarre.
All right, well,
So Jon Stewart, you know, talking about his...
Yeah, he's not wrong about that.
...recent, the whole FCC investigation thing that's going on, but...
I opened an FCC investigation against you today.
Oh, great.
Yeah. I mean, I don't really have a case. I just made some stuff up.
Well, I encourage that. They're going to be disappointed when all they find out is, you know, my show is nothing but recipes and talking to you know, movie stars about, what was your motivation for doing this movie?
I told them, look into the TV thing. It looks like a scam, maybe a front for some sort of illegal money laundering thing.
There's nothing but dirty laundry going on here.
No, it's an actual laundering thing.
That's what
it's
I mean.
Not money laundering. It's actual laundry.
It's actual dirty laundry. I've been here all these years. How many times do I have to take Larry Potash's stuff to the dry cleaners?
No, it's no. Listen, you're preaching to the choir. If I have to wring out Rose shorts one more time, I'm telling you. Hey, before we wrap this up, you know my favorite new show is the hilarious Sean Spicer Daily Briefing. The spicy man comes out between 12:30 and 1:30 most days.
The midday sensation.
Yes, and does a briefing, it's just must watch TV. I hear they're bringing on a cute kid, nosy neighbor, and possibly a love interest for him. But in the meantime, last night, I'm crossing my fingers, I'm crossing my toes, I'm praying there's a camera. Sean Spicer hid in some bushes when reporters at the White House tried to ask him questions about Trump firing Comey.
You are making this up.
No. Reported widely this morning that he hid in some bushes. So what I'd like to do is when Spicy Spicerman walks out today, he's got a picture of Hillary in her tree fort because he probably saw her in the forest that he was in, and he's pulling twigs out of his hair because he was in the bushes.
We're trying to find the audio of him saying, "You can't see me. You can't see me."
Right, right.
Don't look.
Close your eyes, count to 10. I'll answer your questions. And then he runs to the other side of the White House lawn.
The Spicy Spicer show should be a pretty good one today.
Oh, man. And boy, it'd be great to see the President of the United States come out and defend his actions, but I guess that's not going to happen. However, if you'd like to see him light up Twitter with some more immaturity, he's doing plenty of that today. Crickets? What happened there? Got nothing?
You're at the podium.
Musical director John DeCoste.
Singing in my car. In my car. Singing in my car. It's called karaoke. Judged by John DeCoste. John DeCoste.
judged by John Nicholls, the judge of karaoke. A singing superstar in my car. Singing superstar, it's called karaoke.
That's right. John DeCoss is here, your musical director for the program. And that's actually Christopher, your son.
That is Christopher, singing that song.
Getting it done. We're going to play examples first of us singing.
Yes.
All right. I have Dave and Andrea and me here. Who would you like to hear first?
Give me Andrea first. Oh. Give me Andrea first.
This is Andrea singing in her car as an example of what we're looking for. And we'll tell you how you can send either an audio clip or a video with audio clip. To us, so you can enter and play the game as well.
All the cops in the donut shop say, way-oh, walk like an Egyptian. Walk like an Egyptian. Yeah.
Well done.
Okay.
With the whistle.
All right, come on, let's hear you guys.
I'm
not good.
Wow, well done. I can't imagine we could top that. Who would you like to hear next?
Let's go with Steve.
All right, here you go. This is me.
The wheels on the bus go round and round, round and round, round and round. The wheels on the bus go round and round all through the town. The horn on the bus goes beep, 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 beep. The horn on the bus goes beep, beep, beep all through the town.
It's a kid's away, Abigail.
Yeah, I was going to say, please tell us you're singing to Abigail. Please.
I was actually singing to John.
Yeah. I'm the one who videotaped it.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. It's just so cute the way Abigail says, stop, Pops. Stop. Stop, Pops.
Yeah, enough.
And the best part, in the beginning of the video, you got John doing a countdown. 3, 2, 1.
And go.
Go.
Yeah, I feel pretty strong about it. I feel like I nailed
it. Little more bass.
Yeah, and if any of you want to just take that from today's podcast and play it for your own grandchildren or children, you know, feel free. Right. I think they'll really find it delightful.
Yes.
Dave, what number did you do?
I did one of my personal favorites.
Personal
favorite,
Dave?
I think it kind of speaks for itself.
Okay. Roll it.
Mm-hmm. I'm in love with the shape of you. We push and pull like a magnet too. Oh, my heart is falling too. I'm in love with your body.
Whoa.
Last night you were in my room. Now my bed sheets smell like you. Every day I discover something brand new. I'm in love with your body. Oh, I, oh, I, oh, I, oh, I, oh.
Wow.
I'm in love with your body. Oh, I, oh, I, oh, I, oh, I, oh. I'm in love with your body.
I gotta admit, I didn't hear anything after my bed sheets smell like you.
So good.
Wow, it's a whole new facet of Dave
Edmonds. Wow.
That's pretty good, huh?
40 years in Chicago radio.
Yeah, all gone in one clip.
Down the tube. Was Karen in the car with you?
No, I know John was. John was in the car for all of
John and Abigail. Yeah.
And then Steve sang The Wheels on the Bus.
Right. Yes.
My stepkids, that song, they love that song, and they watched that Dave singing that multiple times, and they thought it was the cutest thing ever, and they want to do like a duet with him for that song.
I don't feel like Dave was going for cute there. I feel like he was going for sultry and hot.
I think Dave could be arrested if they actually went through with that.
People need to go to WGNradio.com to see the video of it, because Dave is very intense.
Is his face red? Is he like all?
He's almost stalkerish. He's almost like he's tracking.
Have you seen it?
He doesn't drink it. His eye gaze is like, it's. Yeah. He doesn't even.
Well, I want to keep my eyes on the road.
Yes.
You're not supposed to be driving.
Yeah. I don't know how you and I can compete with that. But
yeah,
all those videos are posted?
All the videos are posted. And really, in Andrea's, all you really see is her neck, because the orientation of her video.
Yeah, I was like, wait, it's just
my
chest.
She didn't do a good job. You get to see her do a little walk like an Egyptian thing with her hand, but you can't see her face. Because if you're going to shoot these videos at home, guys, turn your camera sideways, please.
Yeah.
It would work better for
the portrait vision.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was just trying to get it done so no one saw me doing it.
All right. So we're going to come back and we're going to play the finalists that John's chosen. The first finalist that John's chosen. We'll do traffic first. But before they do that, how do people send in their own videos? Can't imagine they'd be any better than the ones we've already put up with their own videos or audio if you want to prefer to just sing. Those clips go where?
M. Sandberg, SANDBERG at WGNradio.com. Yeah, because we had one listener, what's her name, Carolyn,
She submitted a video, and it's her singing in the car, but you're watching like the road pass by because she's not videoing herself. Which
it's
is
like
fine.
Upside down.
Yeah, because she just wanted the audio, which is fine.
That's okay.
Yeah.
So send those in. msandberg@wgnradio.com.
These and, are funny.
The indictments against Dave are starting to roll in, so let's go to traffic.
I'm in love with your body to children?
When Dave sent me that, I wanted to send it to Coach Collins and Coach Fitz so badly because I thought that they would get a kick out of that. But
send them the link to the website.
A couple of texters here from the 219. I don't know what was more shocking, the firing of Comey or Dave in that song.
Yeah.
From the 630, not sure what's worse, Dave's Little Red Riding Hood Get Up or singing Ed Sheeran. All right, so there you go. Back with whatever. Oh, the winner in just a second, our first winner who gets prizes.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
I'm in love with the shape of you. We push and pull like a magnet do. Although my heart is falling too, I'm in love with your body. Last night you were in my room. Now my bed sheets.
It's not quite viral yet, but it's vuh. But it's vuh right now. It's vuh.
Well, it's, as one texter called it, lame.
Oh, but most of the texters. I mean, it almost sounds like Ed Sheeran.
A little bit.
The texters are very happy. It says, new songs are more fun. You guys need to do more of that. Do some Katy Perry or maybe some Adele. I mean, I could change mine up. The Wheels on the Bus is a classic. I go with something more often like, or more new, I should say. Like, one elephant went out to play on a spider's web one day. I don't know what the elephant was doing on the spider's web. That created a lot of problems.
Yeah, that doesn't make a lot. Great visual.
So
you know how Dave was singing O-A, 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 or whatever?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you were singing E-I-E-I-O.
Ah, yeah, yeah.
A little different.
And Andrea was doing Walk Like an Egyptian.
I was doing way, oh, way, oh, way, oh, way,
oh. All right, John. So what advice do you have for our singers before you announce who this first finalist is? Just relax, I guess?
Just relax. Have fun with it. Make sure you're in your car. Okay. We did have a contestant last week who did a great job, but she was sitting on a park bench.
Yeah, we need you actually in a car.
Traffic.
We need you in a car. That's what's called car eoke.
Yes, but she did a great job.
So how did you determine this winner was the winner? Because last week we did have the guy who did the FDR campaign song.
Yes. Well, and I thought that was very contemporary.
Points for unique.
That's right. So, you know, I always have fun with this, and I hope they do too. And it's always hard. It's always very hard. I have a couple of runners up. I know we don't have their clips, but I just want to say to Brett Rotelli, I think I'm pronouncing your name correctly, phenomenal job.
Okay.
He did such a great job. Carol Larson did a great job too.
Okay. So it's good for them for singing.
Yes. But my,
and they could re-enter with new songs. I just made that rule
up. Wow.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
The wheels on the bus fall right off.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. But the winner is?
The winner is, it's a comedy, it's a singing duo, Tim and Susan Mokarski.
Oh, that couple?
Yes.
Oh, play the clip. These guys are good.
Yeah.
Singing good morning, America, how are you? I said, don't you know me, I'm your native son. I'm the train they call the city of New Orleans. I'll be gone 500 miles when the day's done.
Now, it is important not to record yourself or text while driving, but you could certainly play the banjo or the acoustic guitar.
Yes, but in their defense, she was playing.
Oh, she was.
He was driving.
Okay,
she was
playing. That seems
so
fine.
That, I thought, was... They put a lot into that. That was good.
They're very good. So they win. Let me tell you what they've won so far just for qualifying for the finals. They get a $25 gift card to Pequod's Pizza. Oh, I love the Pequod's Pizza. Chicago, Morton Grove, best pizza in Illinois, according to the Daily Meal. They'll get registration for a couple of riders, and there's two of them, at MB's Bike the Drive on Sunday, May 28th. Are you guys doing that this year?
We are doing Bike the
Andrea
Drive.
Andrea is.
Yes. Dave's bailing on me.
You have other plans? Are you touring?
No, tell him the real reason.
You and Ed Sheeran doing a show somewhere?
No, tell him the real reason.
No.
You had to launder your sheets?
No, I'm going to
a wedding
the night before, and I imagine it's going to be a late night.
Is the wedding local?
Drunk. Yeah, it's local.
Seems like you could show up for this.
I mean, Bike the Drive is for such a great cause. All the proceeds go to the Active Alliance Transportation Authority.
Mm-hmm. Great cause.
Yeah, would you like to be a part of my charity, hear about people Bike the Drive and write a check?
Yeah.
Huh? Yeah? Okay.
He's writing a big check, too.
Register at mbbikethedrive.org. And congratulations. Room will also give you a pair of tickets to see Lerner and Lowe's hit Broadway musical, My Fair Lady. We love those guys when they were.
Oh, they're great. I'm seeing that Sunday with my mom for Mother's Day.
Very limited engagement at the Lyric Opera. You'll hear all the favorites. Go to lyricopera.org today and get your tickets. An App gift card, pleasing people since 1936. I just saw our friend Steve Shapiro the other day at App.
Oh, yeah.
Says hi to everybody. Visit their store in Glenview or online at app.com, abt.com. Mike from Zion won an App gift card earlier in the show. And a ChevyDriveChicago.com, WGN Radio, stainless steel travel mug, and a bag of Papa Nicholas coffee, courtesy of your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. CLTV will join us next.
Last night you were in my room. Now my bed sheets smell like you.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Express yourself. 9:10 now. We continue live from the Allstate Showcase Studio.
Express yourself.
We're continuing to watch, obviously, the fallout in Washington from the firing of the FBI director last night. If anything breaks this hour, we'll tell you about it immediately. But I want to break, at least for the moment, for this. Adam Grant joins us. Adam is a co-author with Sheryl Sandberg, the number one New York Times bestselling author of Lean In. And I think Adam, pretty sure Adam worked on Lean In as well, for a new book called Option B, Facing Adversity, Building Resilience, Finding Joy. And if you're going, Sheryl Sandberg, how do I know? She was a boss at Google before she was recruited to go help run Facebook, where she is COO there. Good morning, Adam. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Nice to have you on. Am I right about that? Didn't you work on Lean In as well?
I didn't work on the book, but I'm on the board.
Ah, got it. And the foundation, just since we brought it up, is?
The Sheryl Sandberg and Dave Goldberg Foundation. It runs both Lean In and Option B.
All right. So, as I understand it, because we just got the book, here's the premise for Option B. Sheryl Sandberg's a very wealthy, very powerful woman. She loses her husband in that horrible situation where he's on a treadmill on vacation with the family, and he fell on the treadmill. He dies. It's a period of time afterwards, and she's trying to do something outside with her kids. And she says to a friend, I need Dave. You know, Dave's gone. I need Dave. And Adam, if I have this story right, her friend says it's not an option. And did the friend bring up option B, or did she say those words?
Yeah, her friend Phil Deutsch said option A is not available, so let's just kick the bleep out of option B.
Right, and the light bulb went off, and now you're off and running with, which I think is a tremendous premise. Option A's do disappear in life, and you need to have an option B, right?
Yeah, I think, you know, sadly, we all live some form of option B, right? For Sheryl, it was, you know, Dave dying of a cardiac arrhythmia. For other people, it's different kinds of loss, whether it's, you know, loss of a marriage due to divorce, loss of a job, loss of a parent who goes to jail. And, you know, we really wanted to try to understand how we can help people build strength in the face of adversity.
Adam, how do you do that, though? How do you build resilience? I know some people are much stronger than others. Others just crumble at the drop of a hat. How do you build resilience?
Well, resilience turns out to be like a muscle. And, you know, oftentimes building it starts with avoiding some thinking traps that a lot of people get stuck in. A colleague of mine, Marty Seligman, spent a lot of time studying what have been called the three Ps. So when something bad happens, many of us end up personalizing it. This is all my fault. We think it's pervasive. This is going to ruin every part of my life. And it feels permanent. It's going to feel this way forever. It's like the opposite of that song, Everything is Awesome.
Right.
Everything is awful. And the more we can avoid those traps and say, you know what, look, not everything that happens to us is because of us. And just because it, you know, it feels this way does not mean it's going to affect every part of my life forever, the easier it is then to begin to cope and recover.
Do you have to take time to grieve that loss before you can jump, or is it better to rip the bandage off and move on to option B?
Well, that definitely varies by person. Everyone grieves in their own way, in their own time. A lot of people are familiar with Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's famous work on the five stages of grief. And what we now know is that they're actually not stages, right? So you don't move in order from, you know, denial to
no
depression.
They're phases, but they're true. Right?
Yeah, and they do, they flicker in and out. And so, you know, you can feel like you've moved past the stage, and then a couple of weeks later, all of a sudden, you're right back in it. And I think that there's a balance between, you know, accepting those emotions, which actually makes it easier to deal with them than trying to fight them constantly, but also saying, look, I'm going to try to, you know, regain some control and start rebuilding my life.
I appreciate, too, how you say it's not just death. It could be an argument, the falling out, a divorce or something like that, because, you know, those are just as hard for many as death. It almost is as though you're suffering a loss, right?
People experience all different kinds of loss. And, you know, I think that the sad thing is that along with primary loss, there's very frequently secondary loss. So we know, for example, that when people lose a job, they're more likely to get depressed. They're more likely to have serious marital problems. They run into financial difficulties. And there's this whole cascade of negative life events that often follows one difficult event. And so I think it's so important to say, look, you know, whatever the kind of adversity is that people have faced in their lives, there are things we can learn that help us all build resilience.
You talking in the book about friendship and about parenting. Let's touch on both of those briefly. What's the platinum rule of friendship?
Well, you know, what we try to do when our friends are suffering is we treat them as we want to be treated. It's much more effective to treat them as they want to be treated. So pretty much my whole life, I've made the mistake of, you know, when someone gets sick or faces loss, I've said, please let me know if there's anything I can do.
I mean,
and only now do I realize that that's just not helpful, because it shifts the burden to them to know what they need and to ask for it. And it's much more meaningful, instead of offering anything, to just do something specific.
And it's good to have a support staff too, right? I mean, people you can turn to, people you can just vent to, you know, because a lot of time it is anger at first.
Yeah, I think that a lot of people feel, I know when Cheryl went through her loss, she felt like she was burdening everyone. She would call me and say, you know, I'm so sorry. And I'd say, look, you know, this is not your fault, right? We talked about personalization then. And eventually I had to ban her from saying sorry. But she came back the next day and she said, I apologize. I was like, no, that's not okay either, right?
Well, here's the thing. You're Sheryl Sandberg. You're rich. You're famous. You're powerful. You're smart. You've got seemingly from what people see from the outside, everything. It doesn't mean you get to skip loss. It doesn't mean you're not subject to a horrific, terrible thing that can happen in your life. And I think that's what makes not just the book, but the work you guys are trying to do important to prepare the rest of us. So let's talk about the parenting thing for a second. Kids see their parents go through something very difficult, let alone the trauma of losing your dad in this most raw example. How do you raise resilient kids? Because you talk about that in the book as well.
Yeah, one of the things we've learned, psychologists have been studying resilience for years, and it actually started studying kids in just the worst situations you can imagine, where they're in severe poverty, they've been victims of abuse or sexual assault, and the question was, how do some kids emerge, you know, incredibly strong and go on to live happy, successful, well-adjusted lives? And one of the biggest insights for me is that kids need to know that they matter. Mattering is just the belief that other people notice you, care about you, and rely on you. And as parents, this is something we can all convey to our children, right? Not just for the worst of adversity, but, you know, when kids fail a test or forget their lines in a school play or don't make a sports team. I think that a lot of parents know how important it is, obviously, to notice their kids and to show them that they care about them. But this extra piece of relying on them is something that very few parents really do enough of, myself included. You know, when you face adversity as a parent, to say to your kids, hey, here's a tough situation that I'm in. What would you suggest that I do? Ask for their advice. It shows that you value their opinion. It gives them a chance to start thinking through how to deal with hardships. And that really prepares them for all kinds of adversity.
I'm glad you said that because, you know, from that piece of the book, it reminded me of somebody I haven't thought about in a long time, but an individual who lost her husband at a young age and had two young children. One of which was an 8-year-old, but a very mature young boy. And she was having a terrible day with it and really devastated. And she said, the way she described it, the sun came up when this 8-year-old came up and put his arm around her and said, Mommy, it's going to be okay. And she thought, if this little guy has the power to believe it's going to be okay in the situation I'm in, then we are going to be okay. And I think that's what you're talking about.
That's amazing. You know, there was something similar that I found just so striking with Cheryl's children, which is, you know, when she first told them that, you know, that their father was gone, not long after, her son thanked her for coming right home to tell them in person. And then her daughter said, I'm sad for, you know, my grandma and my uncle because they lost him too.
Wow.
And you know, when you see that kids, even in the worst situation of their life, have the capacity to focus on others, it really does give you hope.
No kidding. Tell me more about what you're doing outside of the book.
Well, one of the things we did is we started a website, optionb.org, and the goal is to help people connect with others who are going through difficult experiences like theirs. One of the things we heard over and over again is when you go through hardship, it's not just the event itself, but the isolation that follows it. People not knowing what to say, not wanting to bring it up, not wanting to upset you, you know, wanting to move on with their own lives and not be dragged into your difficulty. And we decided that we wanted to do something about that. So we have groups on the website that allow people to connect around grief and loss, incarceration, divorce and family challenges, all kinds of different forms of hardship. And the hope is that people will be able to be there for each other and offer each other support and even advice for how to get through difficulties.
It's well done by you, certainly, and your friend, Sheryl Sandberg, who looks like she's doing great. I mean, you know, how is she doing?
Well, I think, look, it's hard, right? There are days that are extremely difficult, but I think she's one of the most resilient people I've ever met, and she would tell you, you know, it's not about knowing that that's who she was from the beginning. It was about wanting to become that person and having an amazing support system of people around her who helped her do that.
When your option A disappears, there is an option B. The book is out and available everywhere. Get two copies. You're careless. You'll lose the first one. If you lose the first one, you get an option B. There's your second one. I see what I did there? Yeah, there you go. Thanks for the time. And you got a website you want to mention in regards to it?
Yeah, just optionb.org for anyone who's interested.
Optionb.org. Thank you, sir. The Steve Cochran Show continues. We got some sound we want to play for you from the firing of James Comey and the fallout that continues. President Trump has spent some time on Twitter this morning, but so far has not addressed us, the American people. Seems like maybe that ought to happen. I'm told, sadly, that the Spicy Spicerman show will not happen today.
Oh, that's a surprise.
Well, he is actually in the Navy Reserve, and today happens to be the beginning of his four-day duty.
Is this true?
Yes. So Mike Huckabee's daughter, who is his assistant, will do the briefing today.
Oh, so it actually should be, you know, somewhat fulfilling today.
Maybe yeah.
We can get something out of it.
Well, let's see if the president says anything today other than I'm right, you're wrong, na-na-na-na-na-na. 922.
Hey, Steve.
Yes.
Can I chime in with a bad accident?
Yes.
I just got this. Outbound Bishop Ford at 130th. All lanes are blocked. Police and fire on the scene of a bad accident that just was reported. That's outbound Bishop Ford. All lanes blocked, 130th.
All right. Thanks for that. 923. Back in a moment on 720 WGN. Play a little sound from last night's debacle, the firing of James Comey, the FBI director. Donald Trump claimed that the reason he fired James Comey was because he, along with his Justice Department officials, including his Attorney General, who had recused himself from being any part of this, who was a big part of the firing, they all thought, hasn't James Comey been really mean to Hillary Clinton? Well, it seems like an odd choice for President Trump, because if we go on the Wayback Machine, Mr. Peabody, let's go back to October 31st during the campaign, just days before the election and a couple of days after the definitive moment when Comey stood up and said, Anthony Weiner has Hillary Clinton emails on his computer. The next thing you know, she goes from being up by 9 to being within the margin of error, and she loses the election. And I don't want to hear anything about Donald Trump's legendary loyalty, because before Donald Trump fired James Comey, somebody should have said to him, the guy won you the election. And made Hillary Clinton go live in a tree fort. Here's Trump from October.
That was so bad what happened originally, and it took guts for Director Comey to make the move that he made in light of the kind of opposition he had, where they're trying to protect her from criminal prosecution. You know that. It took a lot of guts. I really disagreed with him. I was not his fan. But I'll tell you what he did, he brought back his reputation. He brought it back. He's got to hang tough, because there's a lot of people want him to do the wrong thing. What he did was the right thing.
You got to hang tough, because months from now, I'm going to pretend that audio doesn't exist, and I'm going to fire him. Kellyanne Conway is back. Oh, isn't that good news? She was on with Anderson Cooper last night after the White House said no comment. They decided they had some comment. See if this exchange doesn't make your head explode.
Your White House is saying that what he did was wrong, but previously, as a candidate, Donald Trump was saying it was the right thing.
You're conflating two things that don't belong together. Thanks for the trip down memory lane. I was on your show often last fall saying we were going to win Michigan and how we were going to do it. So that was fun. But here's what happened today. Today, not in a campaign, in the White House, the President of the United States took
So that person doesn't
action.
Exist anymore. Candidate Donald Trump, that's a fictional character we no longer are allowed to refer to. We can now only refer to the Donald Trump who exists today.
Anderson, I'll ignore how unkind that is. And all I'll say is, as President of the United States, he needs confidence in his FBI director, and he doesn't have it.
Jeff Sessions, who has recused himself for anything to do with Russia, why was he involved in this decision? Why somebody has recused himself having anything to do with the Russia investigation involved in the decision to fire the guy who's heading the Russia investigation?
This had nothing to do with Russia, as much as somebody must be getting $50 every time the word is said, I'm convinced.
God, I've missed her.
Oh, my God, I haven't.
She's so sensible.
She's so snippy.
So logical.
What's with the insults right off the bat about the trip down memory lane? You don't have to don't be insulting. Just answer the question.
One of the great problems you have are Democrats doing a touchdown dance. This is not a time to celebrate. The president's wheels coming off, lying and abusing power, is not a good thing for America. So hopefully the Democrats take a deep breath and give this the due process that James Comey didn't get from the president and the Russian investigation hasn't gotten and is threatened now to not get. Chuck Schumer, head of the Democrats. The only way the American people can have faith is what, Chuck?
This investigation must be run as far away as possible from this White House and as far away as possible from anyone that President Trump has appointed. Given the way the president fired Director Comey, any person who he appoints to lead the Russia investigation will be concerned that he or she will meet the same fate as Director Comey if they run afoul of the administration.
I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up this. I don't know, for you numerology fans out there, there was an 18-minute gap in the Nixon tape. There was an 18-day gap in the time it took to fire Michael Flynn. Somewhere Richard Nixon is giggling. And somewhere Sean Spicer came out of the woods last night, pulled his head out of the bush on the White House lawn so he could comment on that 18-day delay. Follow.
Ultimately, the president made the right decision. But I guess the question or the point that I would put back on you is somebody came over, gave us a heads up on a situation, told us there were materials. We were provided those materials 7 days later, reviewed those materials, underwent a process of reviewing the situation, and ultimately the president made a decision and it was the right one. So I think that the process worked, frankly, when you think of the time in which we had the information to make the decision that the president made. Well, I don't think it's not a question of defending Mike Flynn or not. Hold on.
Which time he should seek immunity.
Right. I think Mike Flynn is somebody who honorably served our country in uniform for over 30 years. And I think, as he's noted, Lieutenant General Flynn was asked for his resignation because he misled the vice president. But beyond that, I think he did have an honorable career. He served with distinction in uniform for over 30 years, and the president does not want to smear a good man.
That'd be the good man who was phoning Russia and saying, don't worry about the sanctions. We got your back as soon as we take over. That's the good man he's talking about.
I like how he keeps saying materials, too.
Well, hold on.
Like a trapper keeper or like a ruler.
There's not a bush big enough for this administration to hide in by the time this is done. It's 9:34. We'll come back with a big story in just a moment. More about this right after this on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Woo! Woo!
Woo!
Love that money.
Fortunes in the 9 o'clock hour, sponsored by Grandview Homes, including our friend Elise Link, who joins us now. By the way, we are going to have somebody sing us out today. So if you would like to be a part of karaoke and have John judge you, because John's very judgmental, you can call now. We'll put you on hold for a bit here. But before we get to Bill and Wendy, we'll have you sing. Okay? Number to call is 312-981-7200. Sing in your car.
There you go.
Yeah, yeah. Doubt you're good as Dave, but who knows?
Oh.
So, John, you will be judgmental. Can we count on it?
I will be judgmental.
Okay. All right, Elise Klink is here. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm all right. Based on what happened yesterday with the firing of Comey, the markets reacted yet?
Not so much. Dow is down right now about 48 points. S&P down a fraction. And NASDAQ is down 10. I wouldn't say this is earth-shattering yet. I think they're waiting to see.
Well, if you go back, since so many comparisons are now being made to the Saturday Night Massacre and Watergate, the markets then, in much smaller numbers, but the markets then, I think, followed a similar track after some initial excitement about a Nixon reelection. The drip, drip, drip of the news eventually took its effect.
Yeah, I think that you might see that. I'm waiting for some sort of reaction. I was saying, you know, off the air when we just were in the commercial break that it's I was just taking the train in this morning and hearing a bunch of guys, as it happened, talk about all their money and how they don't really understand what's going on with the economy. But boy, are they raking it in right now.
Well,
good for them.
I'm glad some people are happy. What leads the money news today?
So there's a couple of things, actually. I was going to talk a little bit about real estate because that is what the news is all about today. But I don't know. It seems like there should be something else going on. But in any case,
what's the real estate news?
Well, we're seeing foreclosures at the lowest level since 2005.
Now, that's great.
It's fantastic. State of Illinois, still in the top five. Still
it's not
worst.
Great.
I think Illinois has about one in a 1,083. So out of every 1,000, roughly 1,1100 homes in the state of Illinois, one is in foreclosure. And that puts us at number five. And Rockford is actually the worst. It's one out of every 668, which is sort of major foreclosure numbers.
There are a lot of things to do before it reaches that horrible ending to you and your home in regards to foreclosure. If somebody's headed down the wrong path here, what do you tell them to do?
You can still go to makinghomeaffordable.gov or HARP.gov, H-A-R-P, which is the Home Affordable Refinance Act. That actually hasn't been withdrawn yet or canceled. It does end, I believe, the end of this year. Maybe it's September. I'd have to go and check. But there are still some programs available if you're underwater and you're trying to refinance to what are still low interest rates. And I want to point out that the Fed has now raised rates, and yet mortgage interest rates are like 3.84% for a 30-year. So still incredibly low.
What's the difference between a foreclosure and a short sale? And I mean, I know the difference, but I know it's a very fine line.
So
are short sales kind of on the downside too?
They are. A short sale is when you're selling for less than than you owe on the home. So you owe $100,000, you're selling for $70,000, you're in a short sale position. And that has to be approved by your lender. That's actually a big holdup in the state of Illinois for a variety of reasons. Foreclosure is when the bank just takes your home.
And again, it can happen to anybody where you get upside down. But here's what you don't want to do. Don't stop opening the envelopes and
right.
call the people you owe the money to and say, here's my real life situation. Here's what I can do. Here's what you're asking for. Can we do something together?
Yeah, it's worse when you just ignore what's going on. And for seriously late mortgages, and that's considered 3 months, no comment, no calling, no payment, that's when things can start to get tough. So if you reach out and call, it's actually better. The other thing that's interesting about today's news is there are some new studies showing that technology has permanently shortened the amount of time it takes to sell a house by 2 months.
That's wow. huge.
2 months. It's huge.
That's huge.
Used to take 4 to 6 months to sell a house.
That was the average.
The average. And now it's taking about 2 to 4 months. And actually, there are so many cash sales going on and cash rentals going on that some people are able to close in as little as 3 days. And I would not have believed this, except that my former producer from WSB in Atlanta called me and said, she's buying a house. And I said, really? When are you closing? And she said, 8 days. I said, really? You just signed your contract? And she said, nope, 8 days. And in fact, her lender was able to get her ready to close, and she's closing in 8 days.
So do the Trulia websites of the world, those type of things, are they the leaders in helping this? Because they shorten the amount of time. In other words, if you drive to 30 houses as opposed to look at 30 houses on the internet, that's a significant time saving.
Yeah, it's Trulia, it's Zillow, which together, get ready for this number, have over 100 million eyeballs a month.
Wow.
Now, yeah. I'll remind everybody, there's only 5 million homes sold in this country every year, 5 to 6 million. 100
Is that
million
right?
a month.
Yeah. That's an interesting number.
Yeah.
Yeah, you'd think it would be more. But here's the thing about Zillow that came out. John, I think you and I were talking about it. I know Andre and I were. Mm-hmm. The appraisals, you know, mm-hmm. the comps that show up on
the
Zillow.
The Zestimates.
Yeah. And how...
There's a lawsuit now.
Yeah. Well, how do you feel about that?
I feel like I've always felt about Zillow. I totally respect the technology. However, I think that most areas, it's the Zestimates are off. Sometimes they're really off. And yet they're taken as gospel. And that's a problem because what it does is it sets you up for a mismatch as a buyer and a seller. So if the seller says, I've done a real appraisal and my house is worth X, and a buyer goes, yeah, but Zillow says it's worth X minus 20%, there's a real mismatch in what you're going to be able to get a buyer to offer for your house. And so there is a real issue. If it's a legal issue, I don't really, I don't know.
How do they get away with that?
How does Zillow get away with it?
Yeah, how can you just say, you know what, I feel this house is worth $200 when it actually, like you just said, it could be appraised at $500?
Lawyers have stepped in and written lots of disclaimers in really teeny tiny print. And when you go online, you agree to that.
You check the box.
You do. Yeah. You have to.
John?
You know, when you're driving, you see everybody has seen these signs that are made. They're printed by hand with a marker that says, we buy houses for cash.
Yep. Oh,
you want to explain to me, if you can't afford a sign, how can you afford a home?
Oh, it's a choice not to actually do the sign because they want you to think that this is like a homegrown sort of solution. In fact, you remember the signs for We Buy Ugly Houses, those big huge yellow signs?
Yes.
That has become a franchised business in over 80 markets with billions of dollars in sales every year. And so that started exactly that same way. I've met the owner of that company, and he's built it up to be just a phenomenal cash cow.
Before we go any further, and by the way, Grandview Homes, this is a company that built a business, a legitimate business, sponsor of the segment, built a legitimate business to do this the right way. I personally would recommend them. But before we wrap this segment up, real estate tax bills coming out, those type of things, we hear again and again, and appeal it.
Right.
You agree with that?
Absolutely. 100%. You will never get a reduction if you don't appeal. If you appeal, you might well get some sort of reduction. Also, I want to remind everybody.
Do you ever appeal and get hit for more?
No, never.
Okay.
I have never personally had that happen. Okay. I've only gotten a reduction every time I've done it.
So what's the process? There's online forms and things you fill out?
You can get the process. You have to do it within a certain period of time. I believe it's 30 days. You have to file a notice for the appeal. It might be 60 days in Cook County.
And it's free, too.
And
I get all these solicitations and whatnot, a lawyer saying, oh, I can, if you pay me $800.
I don't think
I'll
you need a lawyer, do you?
You don't need a lawyer, but I have used a lawyer in the past, a couple of different lawyers. What I like about the lawyers is that they are really doing this every single day, and they only get paid if you get a reduction. They get a percentage of that reduction for the first year. That's actually a great deal, but you can certainly do it yourself. On thinklink.com, I've got a process sheet where you can just look up how to reduce your property taxes, and it'll walk you through the process. It's free, by the way. I don't charge for that.
You should go to thinklink.com for all things money anyway.
But basically what you're doing is you've got to look up your tax classification of your house, make sure you're comparing yourself to other houses in the same tax classification in your neighborhood, and it goes without saying, but I'll say it anyway, pick the ones where the tax bill is less than you. You definitely want to be comparing yourself to the less expensive properties, and then that's how you get the reduction. And then you go out and you take pictures of them, and you put in the information. You create a nice little brochure, and you give it to the assessor's office, and that's how the appeals happens. And if you don't like what you get the first time, you can reappeal and reappeal again all the way to the state Supreme Court.
Wow. Look at that.
There you go.
And
yeah.
I could always call my friend Mike Madigan. He'll help.
He's very helpful.
Yes.
Everybody is so helpful.
He loves when I call. now we're going to give away some more. Seventh caller.
There we go.
Madigan didn't show up again today. Thinklink.com for all things money.
Yep. That's a good idea.
Thank you very much. We're going to run out of time to get another contestant on, so John will explain how you can enter, and we'll drag John out again on the phone later this week to judge people. In the meantime, who do you have to say?
In the meantime, we have to remind everybody it's Fresh Attitude Week for Chicago Public Schools. They're going to be highlighting huge celebrations, chef demonstrations today, special menu tastings. One starts this morning at the Sacito Elementary School. The other is at the Herzl Elementary School on the far west side. It's all a part of the collaboration between the French Department of Agriculture, and it's Fresh Attitude Week for Chicago Public Schools today.
And once again, thank you, GrandviewHomes.com.